And today we are beginning this 15th chapter, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, Purushottam Yoga. You are still eating your nut. So this is the Yoga of the Supreme Person. In this chapter, we hear how the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Krishna. In this chapter, we also hear how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated beyond the Brahman and the Paramatma features of the Absolute. He is the complete truth. We've also learned about the identity of the jiva. Who is the jiva in relationship to the Lord? We heard from the point of view in the 14th chapter of the Lord, he said, I am the Father. So now we will hear from the other side, who is the jiva? So this is also an important chapter, because it also stresses the difference between the soul and the super soul. Do you remember what we discussed in chapter 14? In general, what were the topics here? The three modes of material nature and how they influence the jiva. And in the beginning of the chapter, you remember what was there? In the very beginning, we heard how the jiva actually comes into this world. How he comes, how the Lord creates, and how he comes because of his desire. I think you should eat outside. And how he comes because of his desire to enjoy, to control, to himself, he becomes a false purusha. So we heard that first, how he comes in the material world, how he becomes entangled, and then in the end, we heard how he can become free from the gunas by developing discrimination, understanding the work of the gunas, learning how to see himself separate from the gunas. But ultimately we saw that Krishna said that this actual liberation from the gunas, it will only come through unalloyed devotional service. This is how the living entity will gain his liberation. Then in the very end, what did we hear in the very end? What was there? In the very end of the chapter? Yes, we will attain to the Lord's spiritual nature. And in the last verse we heard Krishna is the basis of the impersonal Brahman. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada had explained us that this was the first stage of self-realization. First we realize this aspect of the Brahman. And Krishna had told us that through devotion, when we realize the Brahman, through the process of knowledge, we should know that the Lord is the source of that Brahman. And if we practice devotional service, we will not stop at that realization of the Brahman. We will continue and enter into the Lord's nature will enter into his kingdom. So this Brahman is the first step of the realization. And then the Lord is the source of that Brahman. So the Lord was inviting us to go beyond that conception of the Brahman. And now as we enter this 15th chapter, Krishna begins with a very intricate analogy. An analogy through which he describes the material world. He describes the material world, and he particularly describes that this material world is a reflection. It's a reflection of the spiritual world. So Krishna is gradually leading us beyond the gunas to the Brahman platform. Then he explains that the material world is a reflection of another world. And after describing this material world and how we are entangled in it, then he will actually reveal his dhamma and explain the existence of the spiritual world, so that we may be enthused to go further. So in this chapter we are going to find several parts. From 1 to 5, there is a description of the banyan tree and how to become detached from the material world. Then from 6 to 11, there is a description of Krishna's abode. And there is also a description of the process of transmigration, again, with further details. That if one does not go to the spiritual abode, then one keeps reincarnating within this world. From 12 to 15, we will see Krishna as the maintainer. And the last verses from 16 to 20, we will have a summary of the Vedanta Sutra. Krishna is going to give the conclusions of all the Upanishads. So we understood in this way Krishna's logic. He wants to take us now further, further realization, further than the Brahman. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he also gives some kinds of logic why suddenly Krishna is talking of a banyan tree. He was talking of pure devotional service as the means to get out of the three gunas, and suddenly he's describing a banyan tree. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Arjuna, in his mind, he was thinking, after hearing how the three gunas make up, about after hearing about the prakriti, which makes up this world, makes up the material body and the three gunas, Arjuna was thinking, what is this material world? And where does it begin? Because Krishna had said many things, anadi. This prakriti is anadi, the entanglement of the jiva is anadi. So Arjuna was thinking, what is this world? Where does it begin? And Krishna had talked of the jiva who has to free himself from this world. So Arjuna was thinking, who is this jiva? And then Krishna in the end says that I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. So Arjuna was thinking again that what is this Brahman? Already he had heard before that the Brahman was the living entity. Remember in the beginning of the 13th chapter. So now he's asking, he's wondering again, who is this Brahman? And who is this who is the source of the Brahman? So, understanding Arjuna's questions, Krishna begins this chapter with a description of the material world. To answer his question, what is this material world? Where does it come from? So we'll hear this section here, the first, second verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Urdhva Moola Madhva Shakham Ashvattham Prahuravyam Chandasi Yasya Parmani Yastam Vedasa Vedavit. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the hymn, the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. So this is an analogy. A banyan tree here is called Ashvatta. And it's a strange tree, although it has a root, it has branches, it has leaves. What is strange about it? It seems to be upside down, because it says that the roots are going up, the branches are down. This is not our experience of a tree. But actually, what is the idea? Krishna is trying to convey that it's a reflection. This kind of tree, which has its roots upwards and its branches down, it's something which we can see when we look into a pond of water. When I was a teenager, I used to do jogging. Oh! Previous year's student. Interested still, wants to hear. Yeah, so when I was a teenager, I remember I used to go jogging in the morning in the forest. And there was a special place where there was a very nice, beautiful lake. Small lake, but beautiful lake. And I used to do different things around this lake. I would come early morning, 6:30 something, I was jogging. And everything was silent in the forest. And the first thing I would do, when I would arrive close to the lake, I would stop running, because when you run, you slap your feet on the ground, makes noise, it awakens the whole forest. So I used to walk very slowly, quietly, and I would used to hide behind the bushes around the lake, and I would start.
Rah, 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 rah.
And after some time, the frogs would respond. I would awaken the frogs. And after a few minutes, there was big concert, big, big concert all over the lake. So many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of frogs, they were all singing. Then I would come out from behind the bushes to show them, I treat you. And I would sit there, and I remember many times when it was very quiet and there was no wind, I used to observe the trees in the water. I used to see how the trees are reflected in the water. And the trunk, you can see the trunk begins from the beginning of, from the side of the from the edge of the pond, there is the trunk that begins there, but when you see it on the other side of the pond, it does think that you see the tree coming down like this and then the branches in the middle of the lake. So that was an upside-down tree. I remember seeing that kind of tree. So when I read this in the Bhagavad Gita later on, I thought, oh yes, such trees are seen reflected in the water. So this is the tree of illusion. It's a reflection. Sometimes it is there, and sometimes it is not there. When there is wind and there are ripples on the surface of the water, then there are no more reflections. And then when the water is very quiet, then there is a reflection. So this is the tree of the material world. Or more exactly, actually, this is the tree of our entanglement in the material world. Because you will see that there are so many things in that tree and they are correlated with each other. Because we have heard in chapter 14 that the world is like a kshetra, or the body is a kshetra. It is born from the association of Prakriti and Purusha. And the entanglement of the three modes over the jiva, it develops into a very, very intricate conditioning, very intricate entanglement. And it is very difficult to undo that. Just as if you have ever seen a banyan tree, a huge old banyan tree, you cannot even figure where is the original root. There are so many roots that come down from the branches, and sometimes a secondary root becomes bigger than the original root. And the people make their house in the banyan trees. They are so big. The monkeys, the animals, humans, sadhus, they make their kutir and everything in this banyan tree. And sometimes it's so intricate that it is actually difficult to go through. It's like a small jungle in itself. So therefore Krishna has given this very appropriate analogy for the material world. And he says that it is called, it is avyayam. It is said to be avyayam. Avyayam means what? Eternal, yeah. Imperishable, eternal or imperishable. So, and Srila Prabhupada explained that especially for the non-devotees, especially for the fruitive workers, for them, this banyan tree, or this entanglement in the banyan tree, is eternal. Perpetually, those who do not surrender to Krishna, life after life after life after life, they simply take birth like a monkey that jumps from one branch to another branch and another branch to another branch, and he keeps playing around the tree. So this is what we do. We are just jumping from one branch to the other. But actually, it is only a reflection of the spiritual world. It has no substance. It is a sort of mirage. What is a mirage is something that we see in the desert when we desire something. We so much want to drink. We are so thirsty. We so much want to satisfy our desire to drink, our desire to be happy, to enjoy. We so much want to satisfy, we so much want to enjoy, that somehow or other, from a combination of our mind and the atmospheric condition in the desert, we start seeing pool of water with coconut trees in the distance, an oasis. We begin seeing an oasis. And so we try, we walk, and we go towards it. And suddenly, it just vanishes. Because actually, it wasn't there. It was just the fancy and imagination of our mind. But Srila Prabhupada explains that the oasis, we could see it, even though it was an illusion, that we could see it, because we have experience. We know that in the desert, sometimes, there are places with water and coconut trees and, you know, some life around it. So because we know that, then we could think of such a thing. So this material world, similarly, it's like a mirage. It is not true, but it exists because there is an original world. There is a spiritual world, a real world which is full of nectar and happiness and actual senses and eternal objects which give complete satisfaction. So this material world, Srila Prabhupada said, is created by our desires. This banyan tree is created by our desires. It is impermanent, but it is the reflection of another, which is permanent. So here we hear how it is upside down, Srila Prabhupada says. The root is upwards. Urdhva mulam. There is a root going upwards or coming from up, and adha shakam. There are branches which are down. And then further down, all over the branches, there are leaves. So let us try to understand here. First of all, what is the root of this banyan tree? What is the root of the banyan tree? It is rooted in Brahmaloka. Yes, it is rooted in Brahmaloka. What more can we understand? Well, the root is not exactly our desire. The root is what it's where the origin is. Where is the origin of that tree? So it says the origin is in Brahmaloka. And who is in Brahmaloka? Lord Brahma, who is the creator. He has created all these material world. So the origin comes from the upper planetary systems. Lord Brahma is there, and he has created everything else. We hear that first there is Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, and then there is a manifestation of Brahma. And from Brahma, the entire material world is created. Actually, this manifestation, the banyan tree is a manifestation of all the material elements and so on. It is rooted in the total prakriti. This is what is there beyond Brahmaloka. This is what Lord Brahma, he created all the variety in this world, which comes from the total prakriti, from the Mahatattva. So from the Mahatattva, all this variety has manifested. Now Srila Prabhupada explains that the branches are all the different planetary systems which host all different kinds of living entities, all the 8,400,000 forms of life all over the universe. They are located on different branches of the tree. And we'll see in the next verse that some branches, there are upper branches, there are lower branches. The upper branches are the higher planets, whether they end up the species like the demigods, the charanas, the siddhas, the great sages. And in the lower branches, there are the lower species, including the humans, the animals, the non-moving entities. So these are the different branches. And in this verse here, we hear about the leaves. There are also leaves on the tree, beautiful green leaves on the tree. What are these? The Vedic hymns. The Vedic hymns, which are ultimately meant to nourish our spiritual life and take us back to Krishna and free us from this illusion. But as we know, the Vedic presentation begins from the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. So here, this Chandansi are considered to be the Vedic hymns, and particularly the hymns that promise sense gratification. Because if you remember, this is how we, the people, get attracted to the path of the Vedas, is because the Vedas promise sense gratification. So just like on a tree, when we see a tree from the distance, what do we see mostly? The leaves. That's the most prominent part. We might even not very well see the trunk, but we see a tree, we see the whole big upper part, the green leaves, and we become attracted. Oh, there's a beautiful tree over there. So this is the promises of sense gratification. These are the leaves of the trees. So these promises of sense gratification, they are in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. And they are also everywhere in the material world. Everywhere there is a promise of sense gratification. But it is a promise only. And it is temporary only, because as we know, the leaves fall from the tree. And very soon there are no more leaves on the tree. So these are the leaves on the tree. People being attracted by sense gratification, they desire to remain in that tree. Srila Prabhupada gives a little kick to the Mayavadis regarding this tree being a reflection. Prabhupada explains, that tree can be found beside a reservoir of water. We can see that the trees on the bank reflect upon the water with their branches down and roots up. In other words, the tree of this material world is only a reflection of the real tree of the spiritual world. This reflection of the spiritual world is situated on desire, just as a tree's reflection is situated on water. Desire is the cause of things being situated in this reflected material light. One who wants to get out of this material existence must know this tree through analytical study. Then he can cut off his relationship with it. Then the Vaishnava understanding is that this tree, being the reflection of the real tree, is an exact replica. Everything is there in the spiritual world. So the impersonalists, they consider that the Brahman, which is Nirguna, which has no qualities, is the root of this tree. This is what they consider. They think there is the Brahman, and then comes the Prakriti, the Purusha, the gross elements, the ten senses, and so on. Everything comes from the Brahman. That's how they understand it. But Srila Prabhupada explains that their understanding is half. He says that if Brahman is the center of all manifestations, they consider Brahman the center. So Srila Prabhupada twists their understanding around. Did you see what he did? He said, they say that Brahman is the root of this tree, and they say that Brahman is the center or the origin of this manifestation. So Prabhupada said, if Brahman is the center, if you put Brahman in the center, then 180 degrees, that is the material manifestation, but you should not forget, there is another 180 degrees on the other side. And Brahman is in the middle, that's true. Brahman is in the middle. It is the separation between the material and the spiritual. Brahman is in the middle, 180 down, 180 up. So, in this way, we understand that Krishna is actually here revealing the existence of the spiritual world by this analogy. Now, what is to be done with this tree? Srila Prabhupada explains what is going to be the topic of the next verses, that this tree has to be cut down. It's a tree of illusion. We have to cut it by awakening our desire for Krishna. It is said here that it is avyayam, but the acharyas explain that Krishna's choice of that particular word, ashvatha, to explain the tree, means that actually it is not avyayam. It is avyayam in the sense, as we know, that there is a constant cycle of material creation and destruction, and it goes on forever. But that's only for those who are not devotees. As far as the devotees, from the point of view of a bhakta, this word ashvatha, which means banyan tree, it can be cut into several pieces. And especially we find in this word the small word shva. And shva in Sanskrit means tomorrow. So, and when we put a in front of anything, it becomes negative. So ashva and stha, being situated. So that which does not last till tomorrow, that which has no tomorrow. In other words, that which is temporary, it is this material world, the ashvatha, that which is temporary. So we have to get out of it. Srila Prabhupada calls this the process of extrication. This process of extrication should be understood. In the previous chapters, it has been explained that there are many processes by which to get out of the material entanglement. And up to the 13th chapter, we have seen that devotional service to the Supreme is the best way. Now the basic principle of devotional service is detachment from material activities and attachment to the transcendental service of the Lord. The process of breaking attachment to the material world is discussed in the beginning of this chapter. So the Krishna says in the end of this verse, Yastam Veda Sa Vedavit, that one who knows this tree and who knows how to extricate himself from this tree, he is the knower of the Vedas. Others are readers of the Vedas, maybe. They hear the Vedas, they read the Vedas, but they do not know the Vedas. Prabhupada explains, when it is said that a person knows the Vedas, it is assumed that he knows how to cut off attachment to this material world. If one knows that process, he actually knows the Vedas. One who is attracted by the ritualistic formulas of the Vedas is attracted by the beautiful green leaves of the tree. He does not exactly know the purpose of the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas, as disclosed by the personality of God and Himself, is to cut down this reflected tree and attain the real tree of the spiritual world. Then Krishna continues the description in verse 2. Adhaschodham prasritastasya shakam guna pravritha vishaya pravana adhaschamula nirsantatari karma nubandhi vimanushya loke. The branches of this tree extend downwards and upwards, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to the fruitive actions of human society. So now we have further descriptions here. The branches spread in all directions. This is the shaka. Adaschorvam prasritas dasya shaka. As we said, different living entities in different forms of life on different planets, upper and lower. Then there is the water also. Sometimes it is said water, sometimes... Yeah, there's a little confusion with the analogy here. In the previous purport, Srila Prabhupada said that the tree is reflected on water. And water was taken to be the desires of the living entities. And here Srila Prabhupada said, as the tree is nourished by water, so this tree is nourished by the three modes of material nature. So the water is that which nourishes the tree, the three modes of material nature. So another understanding is that the ground itself, that is the desire. Because the ground is the place where everything is, you know, we take our, we are rooted like a tree is attached in the ground. And the three modes of nature here, Prabhupada equals them to the water. He said, in some places, because according to the water in the material world, there are different species, right? Where there is a lot of water, there is one kind of species. There's fish and water birds, water animals. And then in some other places, there is less water, and so there are other kinds of animals. And if you go in the desert where there is hardly any water, then again it's a matter of water, then you will find insects and very tiny plants that have a very short life or something. So similarly in material world, where there is tamogun, something grows. Where there is rajogun, another thing grows where there is a sattva gun, something else grows. So it all depends on the kind of nourishment. So the nourishment, so you can take it, either of the two, either the nourishment is the ground with different kinds of soil, like the gunas, or it's the water. But Srila Prabhupada also said the water is that on which it is reflected. And the real reason for the reflection is the desire. So the water is usually understood to be the desire. In any case, there is the desire and there are the three gunas. As we know very well, the desire is tainted by the three gunas and accordingly different forms grow. Then the next thing is there are the twigs. What are the twigs? The sense objects. Yeah, the sense objects, which are also in different gunas. There are objects in passion, in ignorance, in goodness. So what are the twigs? The twigs are the little branches, the sub-branches, little branches that grow, keeps growing, new. And then there are the tips of the branches. These are the senses. And the senses are attached to the twigs. Right? The twigs are the objects of the senses. And so the tips of the branch is the last part of the branch that is attached to the twig. Just as our senses are attached to the sense objects. The twigs are sound, form, touch, and so on. And the tips of the branches are the senses, the ears, the nose, the eyes, and so on, which are attached to the enjoyment of different sense objects. Then there are subsidiary roots, which we know in a banyan tree, some little threads, initially some threads, they start growing down from the branches, and if they happen to reach the ground, then they also take root in the ground. And as they take root in the ground, they start pulling their nourishment from the ground. And slowly, slowly, this little thread grows into another trunk. Not another tree. It is the same tree. It is the same tree, but it has several trunks. So Prabhupada says, okay, it's a trunk, but ultimately it takes root there. So there are subsidiary roots. Subsidiary means secondary. There is a primary root, which was the original. Somebody put a seed. There was a seed of a banyan tree, and there was the main trunk. And then from the branches down, some more roots have grown. So what are these roots? Prabhupada explains this is attachment and aversions. And this attachment and aversion, they are the byproducts of suffering and enjoyment. So the senses contact the sense object. Sometimes there is an experience of happiness. So because of happiness, there is attraction. We want more, more, give me more. And sometimes there is not such a good experience. So then the reaction is, no more, no more. Aversion. I don't want this. I don't want this anymore. I don't want this. So this is the material platform. And because of this attachment and aversion, then the tree grows. The tree keeps growing. because we are attached, we want something, we don't want another thing. And this, the Prabhupada says, becomes the tendency for piety, for sinful activity, is also rooted in this understanding of I like, I don't like, I want this, I don't want that. So sometimes we do some pious activity, sometimes we do some sinful activity due to attachment or due to aversion. We kill due to attachment, we overindulge our senses in the sense objects, and because of that the attachment grows, the aversion grows, and the subsidiary branches grow, and there is more and more, and the banyan tree becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and becomes a huge, complex, entangled mass. So, but whereas the main root was rooted in Brahmaloka, and came from the total substance of material nature, these roots, they don't go upwards, they go downwards. And where are they taking roots? Where are their roots? In the human planetary systems. Manushya Loke. Manushya Loke. Meaning that it is in the human planets, in the human sphere, when we take a human birth, that we produce karma. We produce that karma, and it is that karma that will produce another life and another life. Due to our attractions and aversions in this world, we produce perform different types of activities which will result either in going to the higher planets, going to the lower planets, taking this body, that body. So in that way, we remain entangled in this world. Well, it is not like this. It is not like here. In the upper planets, there is predominantly we enjoy the results of our pious or sinful activities. But as we know, we can also get cursed in those places. We can also, you know, some things also happen there. Some reactions are incurred, definitely. But that's not the prominent feature of those places. When we go in the lower planets, we mostly suffer. That's it. We just mostly suffer. There is no light, there is a miserable condition of life, and lots of exploitation. One is always, you know, either engaged in some bad activities or suffering the results of some bad activities. So one is mostly absorbed in suffering. And in the heavenly planet, one is mostly absorbed in enjoyment. Whereas here, also because the human level is the level of passion. In the upper planetary system, there is goodness. So in goodness, very few reactions are created. And then in tamas, in the lower planetary system, people are just, you know, suffering. And there is also not much action. As you know, tamas means inaction. They just suffer the reactions. But in the human species, this is the level of passion. So there is activity. There is so much activity, creating so many reactions. So this is what we studied here. The branches, shaka, guna pravriddha, it grows, nourished by the gunas, vishaya, pravala, meaning there was the object of the senses we saw, the twigs, and then we saw the tips of the branches. Then there is the Adhascha Mulani, that these are the other subsidiary branches. Prabhupada says in the end of the purport, after one enjoys the results of virtuous activities in the upper planetary systems, he comes down to this earth and renews his karma of fruitive activities for promotion. This planet of human beings is considered the field of activities. So when he talked of the kshetra, even though we thought of it as the body in general, but it's particularly the human body. This is the place where karma is created, where we can cultivate the fruit of happiness, distress, entanglement, or liberation. Now in verses 3 and 4, a little bit more about this tree, and then we will hear about the cutting of the tree, how we should be cutting the tree. Although usually it said that there is example of a tree because this should give the idea that it should be cut. I couldn't understand the logic because usually we always hear that trees should not be cut. But at the same time, it's often what happens to a tree. A tree is being cut. So in this case, we are encouraged to cut the tree. Krishna says, Narupamasye hatatho palabhyate nanto nachade nacha sampratishta ashvathamelam subirudhamulam asanga shastrena dhivena chitva tata param tat parimargitavyam yasmin gatana nivartanti bhuya tameva chadyam purusham prapadye yatha pravritti prasita purani. So the first two lines of verse 3 continue to give us some information about that tree. Na rupam upalabhyate means can be perceived. So Prabhupada translates like the real form, rupam. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. So, na upalabhyate, this means we cannot perceive. Na rupam, na anta, na adi, na sampratishta. Who cannot see? Those who are entangled in this world. Those who are seers of the truth, they can see. But those who are entangled in this world, they cannot see. Neither can they see the form that there is actually such thing as entanglement. Those who are entangled don't know. It is said ignorance ignores itself. But we covered by ignorance, we do not know that we are ignorant. So this is the very horrible status of this world, that most people have no idea that they are entangled. At least having come to Krishna consciousness, we are still entangled in many ways, but we know we are. Whereas most of the people do not know they are entangled, so they cannot see that. And they cannot see what is the foundation of this life, what is the beginning, what is the end of this world, nor can they see where this world comes from. In other words, they cannot see the other part, the true part of the tree. They are in the reflection themselves. They don't understand the reflection, and they certainly cannot see the spiritual world, which is the actual source of the existence of this world. So they cannot see any of these things. But with determination, dridhena, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Asanga shastrena. Shastra is a weapon. Shastra with a long R, that is a scripture. And shastra, that is a weapon. Both words have a meaning of imply ruling. We can rule with two things. One is a stick. We can rule over the monkeys with a stick. That's because they don't understand anything but the stick. You can clap your hands, shout, do movements. They don't move. As soon as you take a stick and you bang it a little bit on the ground, then immediately they are scared. They understand the stick. So for those who cannot understand anything, there is the stick, the shastra, to rule them. And for those who can understand, there is shastra. There is the ruling of knowledge. They can understand things by hearing. So here we should use the weapon of detachment to cut this tree. And it is said that this tree, su virudha mulam, it is very strongly rooted. We have heard before, there is an original root that originally we wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna. That was the original thing, why we came here. It's rooted in this mentality, this Purush Bhav is there. And then, that was the original desire. But then, after coming here, we saw so many objects. And we started developing a variety of desires. So many more desires. And all this mixed with the three modes of material nature makes that we are completely entangled. And our roots in this world are very, very, very strong. Many people actually do not like to hear at all about the fact that we will leave this world. And when we tell them that there is a place where we go, where we shall not return, they become very worried. Because they cannot conceive of another place than their native village and their house and so on. So this is very deep-rooted attachment is there. So this should be the first step, that we should develop some detachment from this world. The next verse says, thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns. And there, surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Adi Purusha, which is said here, tam eva chadyam purusham prapadye. This is the Adi Purusha, the original personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord Krishna. We should surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. Prabhupada explains, we cannot see. Since the root is upwards, the extension of the real tree is at the other end. When entangled with the material expansions of the tree, one cannot see how far the tree extends, nor can one see the beginning of this tree. Yet, one has to find out the cause. We have to find out what is the cause beyond this material world. Now, how are we going to cultivate that detachment and find that cause of all causes and become free from this material world. How does Srila Prabhupada explain this in the purport? What is to be done?
By knowledge.
We should study the scriptures in the association of the devotees. We should come together and study the scriptures in the association of the spiritual master, hear from him, read his instructions. We should, Prabhupada said, we must learn detachment by discussion of spiritual science. Knowledge and detachment, they are connected. The more we read, we understand, we discuss the disadvantages of this material world, naturally we become detached from that. So we should have discussions of spiritual science based on authoritative scriptures. And we must hear from persons who are actually in knowledge. As a result of such discussion in the association of devotees, one comes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as we discuss together, based on the scripture, naturally some detachment begins to occur. And we also come to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we develop faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Krishna explains in the verse that the next thing is you surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead. And once we surrender to him and begin the process of devotional service, then complete detachment will come automatically. So, for those who are dry jnanis, impersonalist jnanis, the only thing that there is for them is the discussion over the Upanishads, and they discuss and discuss and discuss and conclude that the grapes are sour. They conclude that anything you do in this world brings trouble, therefore, give it up. So that is their conclusion. And they cannot go further than that. But if we follow the instructions of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, we see that, yes, you should discuss the scriptures, but you should come to the conclusion of Krishna. And you should come to the conclusion of surrendering to Krishna. That should be the conclusion of our study. Our surrender should increase that, yes, let me surrender to Krishna. Because I have thoroughly understood the nature of this world, as it is explained in the Shastra. And because I have thoroughly understood the nature of Krishna, how he is beyond these modes, and how he is the source of everything, and how by connecting myself with him, I will attain to his nature. So this is the discussion of the devotees. One should come to the point of surrender. Yeah, you will come to Brahma and then don't stop there, keep going. Well, this is one of the ways, this is one of the logics that the scriptures always say, that you had a father and a mother. You had parents. How did they come about? They told you about their parents. You may even have met your grandfather, your grandmother, right? And your grandfather, your grandmother, they told you about their mother and their father. They did. But beyond that, you don't know, right? Because we only met our father, and maybe we met our grandfather, grandmother, and we heard them talk about their parents. But we could not meet our grand-grand-grandfather, grand-grand-grandmother. So should we conclude from this that our grand-grandmother was a monkey or that our grand-grandmother was the Brahman? So therefore, Prabhupada always encourages us that that if you go back, you should understand that just as you took birth from a human, a person particularly, a person with a form and qualities and so on, so you keep going back, 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 there must be an original person. So if you go all the way back into the universe, the first father, the first person is Brahma. But Lord Brahma also had an origin. Because we know from Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Brahma, when he was sitting on the lotus, he was alone. He had not yet created. And what did he do? What did Lord Brahma do? Tapasya. Why he did tapasya? To find out? Some ghost.
Voice.
Some voice. Yes, but why was he, what was his thing? Why was he meditating? Why was he doing? Because he wanted to create, that's why he did tapasya? Right. He wanted to know where he was coming from, which proves that he was coming from somewhere. He wanted to know his origin. He wanted to know, what is this all about and where have I come from? Where has this darkness come from and where have I come from? So Lord Brahma is not the last stop. We heard before that he is Pitamaha, he is the grandfather. But there is also Prapitamaha, the great-grandfather. So who is the great-grandfather? That is Vishnu. Vishnu is the great-grandfather. And Krishna has explained us that this great-grandfather who is Vishnu is one amsha of myself. So Krishna is the source, we already heard he is the source of the Paramatma. And now we heard he is the source of the Brahman. And we know the Brahman is the effulgence of the Lord. So in that way Prabhupada says, not that we are sons of Brahma. Yes, we are descendants of Lord Brahma. But he himself came from Vishnu. So in that way he explains it. Yes? What does it say? Where is it?
Yes.
We should hear. You can understand theoretically that you have come from Brahma and Brahma has come from Vishnu. But yes, it is a long process and in fact not possible because all the generations are gone. You can only understand theoretically. And we cannot find the grandfather because he is no more there. I mean, Brahma is there, but all the generations in between, if we really want to go, you know, people do their genealogical tree, the tree, and it's not easy. You can go back 2, 3, 4, 5 generations and then it's not possible to find. So in that way, yes, also. The root of the material tree, you mean? Yeah, but it's like ever. Krishna is the ultimate. That's why here he is inviting to find the cause. Prabhupada says in the, he is inviting to find the original cause. You know. So when we talk of the reflection in the material world, so as we said, there is a. We discussed that before. Krishna explains there is the immediate cause. And there is the remote cause. So in this verse here, we are invited to find the remote cause, which is Krishna. But in the previous description, the cause was the immediate cause. What is the cause? The cause is in Brahmaloka. There is Brahma. But what does that actually mean? That Brahma is, you know, it signifies the Mahatattva. That the cause of this manifestation is the complete material substance. And now Krishna says, go beyond that to the remote cause. So to get out of the entanglement of this strong banyan tree of material life, one must surrender to Krishna. As soon as one surrenders unto Krishna, one becomes detached automatically from this material extension. So in verse 5, Krishna is going to further explain this process of disentanglement from the material world. What this entails. Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvandvaya vimukta sukha dukkha samya gacchanta mudha padamadhyayam. So here we are talking of the amudha. Amudha. Okay. Mudha, we know, is the... What is a mudha? Simple fool. Simple fool is the mudha. One who is just completely absorbed in his senses, sense gratification, doesn't know anything. So this is the opposite here, those who know. So those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are free from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who unbewildered know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. I forgot my references. I had a nice reference for this one here. So different aspects of how we are actually we can disentangle ourselves from this material world here. What is the first requirement? Nirmana. Nirmana. What is that? Free from false prestige. Prabhupada said one should not be deluded by pride. Remain humble. So we heard this. This is the beginning of the process of knowledge. We should have humility. Humility, we should give up the idea that of being puffed up. Prabhupada says the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the lord of material nature. It is very difficult for him to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have to cultivate that understanding, that humility, that service attitude. This is how to get disentangled from this world. Because our propensity to control, to lord over, to dominate, this is what keeps us in this world. And then the next thing is that if we can actually decrease this mentality, as much as we decrease this mentality of lordship, to that extent one will be free from delusion, moha. We will be free from delusion, Prabhupada says. That this delusion is caused by pride, and we can begin the process of surrender only when we have passed this pride is due to illusion. Thinking that I am the Lord of the world. So the illusion is this false ego. We consider ourselves to be the center of the world, to be the center of everything. Burijan Prabhu always says that we believe that the whole world is revolving around our navel. And this is very unfortunate. But we are like that. This is our nature. And so we have to change that. So as soon as one understands that actually I'm not free from illusion, means also to be, to understand we are not this body, we are the spirit soul. So as soon as we understand that, then we will be able to discriminate in our association. So first thing is humility. Next thing is humility with, you know, some little service attitude. Then we will come to the point of understanding that we are not this body and we are servant of Krishna. Then we will be able to associate properly. It says here, jita sangha dosha. Dosha means there are faults. We have to conquer the faults of association. Because it is by association that we either progress spiritually or we regress. We get entangled. So Prabhupada says, what is this false association? It's because we are identified with this body. So we tend to associate with things which are connected with this body and in a wrong way as well. So Prabhupada said, one must become free from all the false associations caused by familial, social, and national affections. So the fault is that we have affection for things which are temporary. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. So this is called Adhyatmanitya, which means that we have to be fixed in spiritual knowledge, we have to be fixed in the understanding of the soul and in the understanding of the super soul of Krishna. Then it says, vinivritta kama. What is that? Once we understand, we'll be, Prabhupada says, we are done with material lust. In other words, we can correct our desire. Once we actually become fixed in knowledge and we understand the Supreme Lord, we are fixed in the understanding of the soul and the super soul, then we will stop being entangled in material desires. And we will begin developing spiritual desires which are going to free us. So next is dvandva vimukta, to become free from the dualities such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. Sukha dukkha samyar. And finally, Prabhupada says, unbewildered. And Prabhupada says, unbewildered means one who knows how to surrender unto the Supreme Person. So with all these qualities, when we cultivate humility, we try to understand we are a servant, we discriminate proper association from improper association, we fix our mind in knowledge, we cultivate the proper desire, we become free from these dualities, then finally we can surrender. So this is the process of detachment. As long as we are not, you know, we are too attached, let's say, because as we said, first some detachment is required, and then bhakti is there, and from bhakti, then there will be total detachment through attachment to Krishna. But it is very difficult to surrender to Krishna if we are still convinced that this world is very nice and I am very nice. If we are still convinced of that, surrender is not going to be possible. So therefore we have to come to a certain point of detachment. We have to cultivate that by study of the scriptures and association of those who are free. So this is the process here that Krishna is giving us. We have to cut the attachment to this material life. We should not be afraid. So after explaining all this and saying that you have to surrender to that Supreme Person, then Krishna explains, where is that Supreme Person? Where is he? Krishna describes his abode from 6 to 11. He gives the qualities of that place. Natat bhasayate suryo na shashanko na pavakaha yad gatvana nivartante tad dhama paramamama. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. So Krishna describes his abode. It is not illumined by the sun, the moon, the fire, the electricity. It must be dark there, right? It must be so dark over there. It must be so dark over there. So it's just, therefore Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport what it means actually, so that the fools are not too bewildered. It's not that it's dark over there, it's that there is no need of artificial light. There is eternal light. It is the kingdom of eternal light. Another understanding, so it is self-luminous because of the Brahma Jyoti, which is light. And as we heard before, the light in this world is a reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. And it is reflected here because otherwise here would be all dark. It's not there that it's dark. In fact, those who know Sanskrit, they will not make that mistake. Because one of the meanings of dharma is light. So when he actually says dharma, it implies light. So there is light there. It is self-luminous. Prabhupada has not invented it. It's the meaning of dharma. It also means that it is beyond, it's not illuminated by the sun and the stars because it's beyond this world. The sun rays do not reach there. The moon rays do not reach there. The sun rays, the moon rays, they are contained within the material universe, which is like a coconut. They don't go beyond that. So it is beyond this world. So Krishna calls it Tadhama Paramam Mama. We know what Mama means. It's my place, okay? And Dhamma means actually everywhere is Krishna's place. Isha Vasya Vilam Sarvam. Here also it's his place. He also said, this is also my place. Everything here is working under my control. I am the Lord of this world. He also said that. So what is the difference? Everywhere is his place, his dharma. But this one is paramam. This is my supreme place. Everywhere is my place. But the supreme place where I reside personally, that is called Paramam Dhamma, Param Dham. And as we know here, Krishna is pointing towards Vaikuntha, the eternal realm where there are spiritual planets which are effulgent in themselves, and they are floating within the Brahma Jyoti, which is also effulgent. So there is nothing but light in the spiritual world. There is no darkness, there is no ignorance, everything is light. And then what is the last thing Krishna says? Yad gatva na nirvartante. One who goes there, he doesn't come back. It's cheap, no return ticket. We go there, we do not come back. Once having gone there, so we have to go. So Srila Prabhupada gives us a very wonderful application of this verse in the purport, and it made me feel like I should write this verse very big in my room and keep it there. See what Srila Prabhupada says about this verse is very beautiful. He says, one should be captivated by this information. This is the news here. We are reading the Transcendental newspaper and we came on the news page. What is the news page? We should be captivated. What should this do to us? The desire. We should desire to go. Remember that we studied that mostly people stay in this world. Why they stay here? They have no information about the spiritual world. Therefore, how can they desire? When we see an object, we say, oh, I want that. And as long as we haven't seen it, the desire does not awaken because I don't know that it exists. You know? So once we hear about the spiritual world, this should awaken our desire to go back to Godhead. And for those who have already some desire to go back to Godhead, we should meditate on this verse to increase our desire to go back to Godhead. This is why Krishna is speaking of this dham, so that we feel attracted to that place. What we should desire to transfer ourselves to that eternal world and extricate ourselves from this false reflection of reality. For one who is too much attached to this material world, it is very difficult to cut that attachment. But if he takes to Krishna consciousness, there is a chance of gradually becoming detached. So what is to be done? One has to associate himself with devotees, those who are in Krishna consciousness. So this is what this should give us. We should understand, okay, I want to go there. How to get there? I'm so attached. I'm so attached to this world. So Prabhupada said, one should search out a society dedicated to Krishna consciousness and learn how to discharge devotional service. In this way, he can cut off this attachment to the material world. One cannot become detached from the attraction of the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth. He must become attached to the devotional service of the Lord. So what is Prabhupada explaining here? We should take this verse as an impetus to desire to go back to Godhead, to find the devotees who can lead us back to Godhead. And he also says that it's not a question, it's not an external process. It's not an external process. You should find, because he says, you should search out a society dedicated to Krishna consciousness and learn how to discharge devotional service. So sometimes we come, he's warning that you find that society and don't just take to the external aspects of that society. You should learn how to serve, how to become a devotee so that we can enter into the spiritual world. Therefore he says, One cannot become detached from the attraction of the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth. So this is, means two things. One is this, we should not be external in our practice. Another thing it means, saffron cloth also indicates the impersonalists who just take sannyas and think that they have become liberated. But no, to become liberated means to become attached to Krishna. So we should cultivate that attachment. Therefore, one should take it very seriously that devotional service, as described in the 12th chapter, is the only way to get out of this false representation of the real tree. In chapter 14, the contamination of all kinds of processes by material nature is described. Only devotional service is described as purely transcendental. So everything that belongs to this world is tainted by the gunas. Only devotional service is a transcendental activity. You should become very convinced of this. We should understand the process of pure devotional service. And this has to be performed with attachment. And that attachment is only obtained in the association of those who have the attachment. Then text 7, Krishna speaks of the identity of the jiva now. So his identity is defined in the first two lines, and in the second two lines, his conditioning or entanglement in the material world is defined. Mamevamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manasasthani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So this is an important verse because it shows the connection between the jiva and Krishna. And it defeats impersonalism. How does it defeat impersonalism here? My fragmental part. So what does that mean? They are not same. They are not the Lord. They are not the entire complete Brahman. They are not the Brahman. They are not the Lord themselves. And what else?
Sanatana.
Hmm?
Sanatana.
Sanatana.
Ever-existing.
Ever-existing, and they are ever-existing in this position of eternally fragmented parts. Not that in the past they were not fragmented, and now they have become fragmented, and liberation means that they merge again. Hmm? So, no. This defeats the idea of merging because Krishna says, Ansha Sanatana. They are eternally expanded parts of Krishna. He is eternally fragmented. This echoes one of the first verses that we heard in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, if you can remember. Which verse was establishing this plurality of the soul? Yes. Yes. Natve vaha jatunasam. What was it? Sorry, I'm mixing up. Yes. Natve vaham jatunasam natvam nimena janadipaha. Yes. There was never a time when you did not exist and I did not exist, and and all these kings. So Krishna was establishing the plurality of the soul on this basis, because they are Ansha Sanatana. Srila Prabhupada explains, in this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Eternally, it is not that he assumes individuality in his conditional life and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He is eternally fragmented. It is clearly said, Sanatana. And towards the end of the purport, Prabhupada adds, the words Mame Vamsha, fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are very significant. The fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is not like some material broken part. You remember we thought of this? We have already understood in the second chapter that the spirit cannot be cut into pieces. Nenam chindanti shastrani. Very good. This fragment is not materially conceived. It is not like matter, which can be cut into pieces and joined together again with glue. There is no glue here. It is eternally fragmented. And as we know, on one hand it is eternally fragmented, and on the other hand it is never separated from the Lord, because there is nothing but the Lord. Therefore, often we have seen the analogy of the sun and its rays. They are different, but they are one. They consist of a complete, they make up a complete whole. So Prabhupada explains that there are different kinds of expansions or anshas of the Lord. There are the primary personal expansions of the Lord, which are called Swa Ansha, and which are the Vishnu Tattvas of different kinds, whether it's the Vishnu, the Purusha Avatar in this world, or there is Ram, Nishinga, all the incarnations of the Lord, which are Vishnu Tattva. And this includes the expansion of the Mahavishnu who creates this world. And then there is the Jiva Tattva. So the Jiva Tattva is a Vibhin Ansha, a separated, secondary expansion of the Lord. And what is their nature? Srila Prabhupada explains, the separated expansions are called living entities, and they are eternally servitors of the Lord. What else he explains about them? They have their identities, and they have qualities. They have parts of the Lord's qualities. And one quality is important for them, is that they have this quality of independence. Every living entity has an individual soul. As an individual soul, has his personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul, and by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In either case, he is qualitatively eternal as the Supreme Lord. So, Sanatana. We are always Sanatana. The material body is perishable, but the nature of the jiva never changes. We are eternally Krishna's part and parcel. Then Krishna explains the entanglement of the jiva with the word karshati. Oh, it's harsh in itself. Karshati. What does it mean, karshati? They are struggling due to their entanglement. Prabhupada explains that they are shackled, they have shackled. He says they are struggling or grappling hard. He is shackled by iron chains. And sometimes it is said that there are iron chains, silver chains, gold chains. Some people like to wear gold chain, but a chain is a chain. So the shackles, according to the modes of nature, those who are more, if one is under the tamas, more tamas, then he's more entangled. This means that his independence has become very reduced and his consciousness has become very reduced. And one impassioned, or when he wears a silver chains, you know, so it looks smart. It looks like a decoration, but it's actually, it's a chain, it's an entanglement. And then there are others, they are in the mode of goodness. So their entanglement is like a gold chain. It looks valuable. So many nice qualities. So many nice qualities. But as we saw, there are also, they can be detrimental sometimes as well. And unless there is Krishna consciousness, they are not completely useful. So how is he bound? By the false ego. So this is the initial nut between this. This is the join, the pivot. It's called the pivot. The pivot between matter and spirit. That false identification, this sense of being an enjoyer, being the controller, being the Lord. This thing that binds the Purusha and the Prakriti together. And then we hear here more mechanics of the entanglement is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is a chief agent which is driving him in this material existence. So the mind, the function, the mind we should understand is an agent of the false ego. The mind is always covering up for the false ego. You should notice that in our own consciousness. It always happens. The mind covers up. No, it's not so bad. No, it's not so terrible. No, it's not this, not that. Oh, no, no, nothing happened. Go ahead. You know, it's always covering up because it's actually protecting the false ego. The false ego is a very sense of self in this world, and we have to protect our sense of being something. You know? So this protection is given by the mind that covers things. And how does the entanglement come? So this is the modes of nature. They bind the mind. They act on the mind. We discussed that in chapter 14, that we should discriminate when our mind is under which modes. Because according to the modes that control our subtle mind, then our activities will be entangling or liberating material or transcendental. So here Prabhupada says that when the mind is in the mode of goodness, the activities are good. And this is how we get entangled in this world. When the mind is in the mode of passion, the activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of ignorance, it travels to the lower species of life. So this is how the material nature basically controls us. It controls, it influences the material mind. And the mind influences our activities. So there is the mind and there is something else also. Mana shashta nindriyani.
Ah,
there are the senses also. The six senses means, that means the five senses, Prabhupada says, which include the mind. And the mind has been separated, meaning the stress is put on the mind. The mind is very important. So between the mind and the senses, we become bound. These are the two agents. First the mind, and then the senses. The senses and the mind, they drag the conditioned soul. They drag him. And thus he remains conditioned, life after life. And this karshati struggle, it involves the process of transmigration, because karshati means to drag, you know. And it also, it's like that, that in the next verse it will describe transmigration. So we struggle in this life, and due to this mind and senses, we are dragged into another life. So the struggle continues in the other life, unless we obtain liberation. There is struggle life after life. So in contrast to this, Srila Prabhupada talks about real existence in his purport. He says that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and senses, and when he is liberated, this material covering perishes, but his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. The following information is there in the Madhyandinayana Shruti. So, Prabhupada has given the Sanskrit text, which does indicate that the living entity in the liberated stage sees, hears, and experiences. It says, Pashyati, Shrinoti, Anubhavati. It is stated that when a living entity gives up this material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body. And in his spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face. And he can understand the Supreme Personality as he is. And Prabhupada gives another reference. From Smriti also it is understood. Vasanti yatra purusha sarve vaikunta murtaya. In the spiritual planets, everyone lives in bodies featured like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada explains that the part and parcel of the Lord and the Vishnu Murtis, there is no difference between their bodies on the spiritual platform. We heard sometimes that that in the spiritual world there is liberation in Vaikuntha, which is called Sarupya Mukti. And those who obtain Sarupya Mukti, they have the same form as Narayana. It is that only the goddess of fortune, she knows which one is the original Narayana. Because they do not, they look exactly the same. Their features are the same. They also have palaces like the Lord. But they do not have the, there is a little Shivatsa, and there is a little, yes, and a little tuft of white hair on the chest. The Lord has little white hair here.
There is a Vatsa.
Yeah. Yes, that's your son. So they don't have that. They don't have this. But otherwise everything is the same. And it's also the same in the sense that we heard all the senses can perform the activities of any other sense, and so on. So this is where Krishna is trying to attract us, to tell us, please come. Come. After giving up the material body, we can... This is how we will go there, in a spiritual body. We will not go with this body, with the suitcase and everything. We will not go. Text 8. Shariram yadapnoti yachapyukratishvaram rihidvetani samyati vayurgandhari vashaya. So here Krishna explains transmigration, again with an analogy. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aroma. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Here the living entity is described as Ishvara. It says, Yacha Utkramat Ishvara. The controller of his own body. If he likes, he can change his body to a higher grade. And if he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change his body undergoes depends upon him. At the time of death, the consciousness he has created will carry him on to the next type of body. So what does this have to do with the analogy of the aroma? What is the aroma? What is the air? The aroma is the soul? The air is the soul? Yeah, but how does it happen here? Okay, yeah.
Air carries the aroma depending on the flower. Like rose flower, it carries the rose aroma. Okay. When it's jasmine, it carries the jasmine.
Haji. And what is the rose aroma and what is the jasmine aroma? No, but these are the impressions. The impressions that we gather from life to life. There are impressions. The air is the subtle body. The air is the subtle body. And within the subtle body, there is the conception of the next body. And this conception is the aroma. And it is made up of all the different impressions that we carry during a lifetime. There are so many impressions. And these impressions are tainted with the three gunas. Because the soul is, when the soul leaves the body, the soul doesn't just go alone. Or rather, the soul at the time of death leaves the gross body, but it doesn't leave the subtle body. Thus, it is the subtle body that carries the soul to its next birth. Death is the destruction of the gross body, but not our mind. Our mind we keep life after life. That's why we like it so much. We are so attached to our mind, more than we are attached to our body. Because we've been together, anadikalse, since a long time. So the subtle body is like air. during this lifetime, our subtle body was there from the time of birth till the time of death, and we went through so many sorts of happiness and so many impressions, so much traumas and fears and attractions, desires have awakened. Some have been fulfilled, some have not been fulfilled. And at the time of death, there is a prominent mood which is there, which is like an aroma. And so, when we take birth, when the next birth happens like this, that in the next birth, from this aroma, manifests again another gross body. From the subtle body itself, based on the impressions and desires which are in the subtle body, another gross body manifests, so that the jiva can fulfill his desires and you know, do whatever he has to do. So this is the process of transmigration. The subtle body carries the conceptions and develops another gross body based on that. The air? Let me see here. There is no... No. This is the soul which is... cocooned. The soul is cocooned. It's the consciousness which has different aromas. The consciousness is covered by all these different impressions. But the air is particularly the subtle body, because it's the subtle body that carries the soul to the next thing, to the next life. So, in general, when we talk of conditioned living entity, you keep together the jiva and the covering of the jiva. It's called the adhyatmika purusha. The adhyatmika purusha is the jivatma with its conditioning. And when there is dissolution of the material world and we did not get liberation, this whole cocoon, the jiva, it's explained in the Bhagavatam, cocooned within its own conditioning, goes to Mahavishnu. And at the time of creation, it comes out again with the same cocoon, and the flower, the aroma, starts expanding. And as the aroma expands, the next body is formed. And in this way also, in one life, when someone takes birth and grows and so on, we can, those who are expert, can smell. By looking at one person, they can smell what the previous life was. You can understand what that, where that person came from. We can understand that. By seeing the nature of the person, which is the subtle nature, we can understand what that person was doing in previous life. One gets a different body according to karma, and he has to quit this body in due course. It is stated here that the subtle body, which carries the conception of the next body, develops another body in the next life. This process of transmigration from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called karshati, or struggle for existence. So two meanings of karshati. One is struggle in this life, and the other is transmigration. That's also a struggle, because one is dragged. Text 9, this one is very interesting. How the next body is formed. Very interesting. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam ghanam eva cha adisthaya manaschayam vishayam upasevate. The living entity thus taking another gross body obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose and sense of touch. We never see the whole thing separate, right? But actually, we went shopping, we got a nose from there, we got the ears from there. The doctors will say sometimes, people who have funny teeth, it's vata. So you have this kind of guna, so you get this kind of teeth, then you get a beautiful nose, and then ugly eyes, small ears, beautiful hair. If you had been shopping, obviously you would have purchased everything first class. But it was according to the aroma. So this also creates detachment when you hear a whole... Usually you see the whole thing together, the whole body together. But I say, no, it has been put together. You purchase the ears from there, the nose from there, glued it all together and put a smile in the middle. So the living entity that's taking another gross body obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. This is another vision of the body, right? Usually you think our body is, you know, it's grouped around what? It's just together, I think. Maybe around the heart. Well, here it says, in the heart is the mind. It's actually grouped about the mind and the nature of the mind. In other words, the type of nose, eyes, ears is according to the flavor, the nature which is in the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. And last time, Namrata had asked, what does it mean that the body determines the enjoyment and the suffering? This is explained here. According to the type of senses we have access to different things. If you get wings, you can fly. If you get long legs, maybe you are a horse, you can run. So according to the senses, we have access to the sense objects. And the sense objects, we have access to the sense objects. So let's see now how this works. Conscious in Prabhupada says, in other words, if the living entity adulterates his consciousness with the qualities of cats and dogs, in his next life he gets a cat or dog body and enjoys. Consciousness is originally pure like water, but if we mix water with a certain color, it changes. Similarly, consciousness is pure, for the spirit soul is pure, but consciousness is changed according to the association of the material qualities. Real consciousness is Krishna consciousness. So when we develop Krishna consciousness, then there is no more this kind of recreating a new body. Krishna consciousness means transcendental consciousness, and what evolves from that transcendental consciousness is a transcendental body. So adishthaya means that the person takes shelter, the mind takes shelter in the senses. So you can draw a picture with the mind in the center. This is the center of our life in general. There is a mind in the center, and then it branches out from the mind. For the particular type of mind, you get shrotram. You get shrotram, which is an ear. And through the ear, you get access to the object sound. And then there is another sense, chakshu, which is the eye. So from the eye, you get access to the rupa, which is the form. and all the objects, you can enjoy all the things. This is the same also. Sometimes when we see the objects, we consider them like, we don't see all these different kinds of objects, but they are all objects. And then there is the sparshanam. You get the sense of touch according to the desires and the nature of the mind. We get a special type of sense of touch. And through that, we enjoy the objects of touch, whatever things, softness, cold, heat, these things. So when it is roughness. And then rasanam, this is the sense of taste, this is the tongue. And we enjoy taste. And then there is ghanam, which is, so with this sense of smell, so we develop the nose, and then all the different objects of smell, the aromas, perfumes, etc. So actually the senses, when it says here, mana shashtan indriyani, it means that both the mind and the senses, they exist on the subtle platform. The soul is carried in that subtle body, which includes the mind and subtle senses, which are grouped about the mind. So when we talk of shrotram, chakshu, sparshanam, rasanam, ghanam, these are the subtle senses. And from these subtle senses, according to what modes they are controlled by and what desires are in the subtle body, then this becomes a nose on the physical platform. It becomes a nose on the physical platform. It becomes an ear, a specific type of ear, specific type of everything, different senses. And through these gross senses, then we access the objects. And, And this also gives rise to not only the senses of perception, but also the senses of action. The hands, the legs, and so on. The senses of action are also generated in the same way. I don't know whether anybody has found how they are exactly generated. I'm not sure, I haven't. But I thought like the rasanam means that it manifests the tongue. So I suppose the voice is manifested in connection to that. Like that, some of them you can figure out how they are manifested. But this is how they are manifested. From the mind, they expand from the subtle level to the gross level, and then accessing the objects and the senses. They get what?
They get the subtle type of body, which senses are prominent, so they get acting that body.
Yes.
So somebody,
Yes.
That they get acting that body. Like beings, they have some dogs, they have different senses, they can smell.
This
previous body, if you are strong in one sense, the next body you get that.
Strong stance, yes. Somebody who is eating all the time may get, Prabhupada said, in the fish, the most prominent sense is the mouth. So if we eat all the time, we may get the mouth of a fish, which is the main part of the fish. And of course, if we were eating abominable things, then we may get the mouth of a pig. Yeah, so like that, definitely. According to the prominence of the desires and where we have been spending our time, then in the next life we develop accordingly. Which is really scary. It's very scary when you understand that this is an automatic process. You know, it's not that you choose. You choose when we act in the present, At that time we choose. But after the action is completed, the choice is done. We cannot avoid the reaction. So these are all verses that should draw us towards Krishna consciousness. Understand that we should just develop Krishna consciousness. By developing Krishna consciousness, two things happen. One is the subtle body is cleansed from all the nonsense, attractions, repulsions, whatever may be inside, it becomes cleansed. And then we develop attraction for Krishna. So at the time of death, we will not be drawn by the subtle body. We have to destroy the impressions in that subtle body so that we can move into a spiritual body. What is that? Therefore, those who are highly developed, is that the one? Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best. Oh no, sorry, I'm in the wrong purport here. Oh, that's scary. Oof. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, he is in pure life. But if this consciousness is adulterated by some type of material mentality, in the next life he gets a corresponding body. He does not necessarily get a human body again. He can get the body of a cat, dog, hog, demigod, or one of many other forms, for there are 8,400,000 species. That's scary. This Prabhupada is talking here of what happens to those who are not Krishna conscious. He's describing the process of transmigration. It's not about the devotees. Hopefully. No. Adulterated means material. Material consciousness. But when we read these things, it makes us like we know we have to take Krishna consciousness very seriously. That's what it should inspire us to become more and more serious, because otherwise, you know, there is always danger. So we have to practice, keep practicing, and keep that faith that this will save us from falling into these lower species of life, which is really scary. Cannot talk, cannot, and especially cannot advance in consciousness anymore. The animals are stuck. They cannot advance. They cannot advance, and they cannot. Also, when one falls in the lower species, one cannot come back in one life back to human life. Then there is an automatic. There is a set evolutionary process of the consciousness. First, if you are in this type of body, then the next consciousness is another type. The next consciousness is another type and another type, and depending how many are in between that particular species and human life, that many lifetimes. And so, yes. Any questions? Yes, same. Yes, if you like to run, you have good legs. Get good legs. According to the desires. According to the desires and also according to the karma. So it's the desires and it's the karma. If we have performed punya karma, then you get good body. And if we have performed papi karma, then we get some kind of faulty body. Even if it's a human body, a very bad karma means animal, tree. But otherwise, even within the human species, you can see Sometimes bodies can be really upside down. But still it doesn't stop Krishna consciousness. Right now we are having a devotee who is teaching Bhakti Shastri in Ahmedabad, and he's sitting on a wheelchair, and he's a paraplegic. His body, it is your godbrother, no? So he's a paraplegic. His body is like, you don't know what to do. It's complete in disorder. This is in total disorder. But he can think. He's not only he can think, but he is a devotee, and he can study. His intelligence is there. He can study. He can speak. He can preach. He can teach. And it's such a fantastic experience when he explains the Bhagavad Gita, and you see this body is very strange. So, according to the karmas that we have done, then you know the body is more or less complete, more or less functional, but the consciousness doesn't go. Krishna protects. Obviously, this person must have been a great devotee, something and something, who knows what. But, and so the consciousness carries over. Yeah, karma is separate from the spiritual consciousness. It's very separate. Beauty in the body is obtained by punya karma. Janmeshwarya Shruta Shri Bhi. When one performs punya karma, is very pious, then he will get beauty, he will get intelligence, he will get birth in a very good family, will get wealth. Janma, Ishwarya, Shruta, Shri Bhi. That's four, right? Only four? Yeah. So you will get this. And these are the results of punya. They can be used in Krishna consciousness, but they are also very dangerous. And there is the opposite, that if one is performing sinful activity, then he will get something else. There will be the opposite. There will be poverty. And that's why Prabhupada was not into feeding the poor. He said, you have to enlighten them in consciousness. What's the use of feeding them? They have become poor because their consciousness is wrong. So you have to rectify the consciousness, and then they will no longer be poor. So, therefore, food for life, you give food, but it's prasadam. Because otherwise it's useless. So if there is pap, you will get poverty, you will get ugliness, Kurup body, they call it, strange type of imperfect body, a birth in a low-class family, no education. So these are the results of sinful activities. But it doesn't matter. Once one comes to Krishna consciousness, you can take advantage of whatever qualities have been given. Use them in Krishna's service. Everything is perfect. So we will stop here. So we'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow we will continue with this 15th chapter. It would be nice if we finish this. Let's see how much good we can perform tomorrow. And try to finish this chapter. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki.